Well, hello there. In this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, 32 cores of beast AMD, sexy, sleek, and smart phones, a new mate for you, a mate, yes, blinding storage speed, and seriously, hot hardware that we just gave away. Next. Welcome on back to this here show that we call Hot Hardwares. That's the website. And our little posse called 2.5 Geeks. I'm Dave Altavilla. I'm joined, as always, when we try to be here every Wednesday at 5:30, if we're lucky, by the illustrious Marco Cipetta and the ever incomparable Chris Getting. Gentlemen, that's a big tee up. Can you live up to those credentials?
Oh my gosh, absolutely not. That was way too much for me. I'm feeling all flush and verklempt.
Well, you look flush, but I wouldn't say verklempt. I'm not even sure quite what that means.
Me neither. I think
it's Swedish, is it not? Yeah. But aside from being verklempt, you look fabulous. And as always, it's great to gaze upon you, my geek brother.
You're too kind, my ultimate friend.
Get the hip boots out now. We're already wading into it. Hey, Chris, what's going on in Maine today? What's new and exciting from God's country?
Well, I'm here. I have beer. I don't know what more you want from me.
I can't ask for more, actually. I have beer myself. I'm going to get that into the frame. This is a Wachusett Wally from Wachusett Mountain Brewing up here in Massachusetts, Princeton, Massachusetts. It is fabulous. It is a bitey, rich IPA that is super hopped, but it is also a hazy, fruity New England style IPA. None of that West Coast stuff. We're New England style up here. What you imbibing, Chris?
I've got the New Belgium 1554 Black Lager, which is a good little different. But if you want to send some of that up my way, I wouldn't complain too much.
Yeah, I could do that. I'm sure. I wonder if it makes its way up to your neck of the woods. But wait a minute. I heard something that was rather Maine-esque in your response. It was a good little different. Is that what you said?
I'm not exactly sure what I just said. I guess we have to go to the replay, but it's possible.
A good bit different? Or it sounded like can't get there.
A good bit different. Yeah. Probably yeah. What I said. Yeah, you can't get there from here. Hey, yeah.
Right, exactly. So if you're not familiar with the Maine vernacular, stick around and Chris will train you in that. So, gentlemen, it's been a couple of weeks, actually. We were pretty busy last couple of weeks. A little bit of travel going on, a little bit of launch stuff going on. So we've been flat out as always, but lots to talk about. Lots of new technologies afoot. From the announcements that were at E3 and all over the place, actually, lots of good stuff. So let's dive right in and get right to it. We had another round of, and I haven't even gotten a chance to gaze upon this myself yet, but Marco, you just got through launching the ADATA SX8200 NVMe SSD review, blinding storage or blistering storage media is what I have for a footnote. Is that true or what are we talking about here? It's a new NVMe drive, huh?
Yeah, yes and no. It is blistering. Before I begin, we have the incomparable Francois Pierre Noel in the chat. Hello, Francois. Good to have you live, brother.
Oh, what's happening, Francois?
Yeah, I kind of took a complete 180 from my last SSD review. Last SSD review was the Toshiba RC100, which was this super tiny single chip SSD for mainstream applications. The ADATA drive has one thing in common with the Toshiba drive. It's really aggressively priced. I'll get to that a little bit later, but this drive is interesting. So it's based on a SMI 8-channel controller, and it's featuring second-gen IMFT NAND flash memory. Of course, ADATA worked their magic with the firmware. And now these companies can sort of tweak and tune their drives for particular workloads. This is a drive specifically for gamers and enthusiasts. Now, if you look at the specs, it's got really nice sequential transfer performance. So reads are in the 3.2 gigabyte per second range with writes in the 1.7 gig per second range. That's not the fastest versus drives like the WD Black or Samsung SSD 970 Evo, But if you come by and look at the numbers, you'll see something interesting. So in the raw sequential transfers, reads are really competitive with some of the fastest drives. Writes are not quite as fast. Sequential writes are not quite as fast as some of the other drives. Latency, it's read latency is competitive. Write latency was a little bit behind some of the other drives. But 4K, low queue depth, random transfers, it smoked every other drive we tested. It's a really interesting drive. So, you know, you can go simple with an NVMe SSD and keep prices down, or you can sort of, I don't want to say previous gen tech because it is second gen NAND flash, but with the SMI controller, with the second gen TLC NAND flash, ADATA chose, there is a DRAM cache on the drive. You know, it's not going to blow away the latest current gen drives, but it's super fast. And in just to give an example of the low queue depth transfers, the Samsung SSD 970 Evo does about 51 megs a second, whereas the ADATA drive did 6858. That's a huge jump for that test. And in terms of writes, it's a little slower, but it's right there. The Samsung drive did 179 megs a second. This one, 168. And if you look at Iometer, it's a similar result. Now, across the higher queue depths, it kind of lags behind a little bit. But at QD1, it's got the best bandwidth and the lowest latency. So really a strong drive for the kind of applications consumers are going to use it for.
So on that graph, the red line is what we were looking at there. So you're saying it jumps out of the gate at low queue depth the fastest, and then, you know, sort of competes as you get into the higher queue depth stuff. But low queue depth, when you say low queue depth, just to give the viewers a frame of reference, low queue depth is where the average consumer desktop works, right? I mean, that's
correct.
Sort of the average workload for system responsiveness. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. Now, if you're running a bunch of stuff and doing, you know, running some heavy workloads, maybe you'll see bursts of high queue depths. But for the vast majority of the time, most consumers, their PC is the storage subsystem is going to be operating at low queue depths. So where it matters most, this drive is fast. Now, here's the kicker. Prices have fluctuated since I've had it in hand for testing. They're actually the lowest I've seen them as of publishing today. The 480 gig drive that I reviewed is only $159. So 33 cents a gig for a really well-balanced NVMe SSD. That's, you know, overall, it doesn't smoke every drive in every test, but overall, really strong drive for a competitive price.
What do we know about this is interesting. This is an interesting product, really nice price, solid performance all around. And like you said, performance where it matters for the mainstream consumer. What's the background on ADATA? I know the name. They've been around a while. Where do they come from? What are they about? I mean, I'm thinking, you know, it's got a 5-year warranty. You know, what's the company behind that, supporting it, all that good stuff?
I mean, ADATA has been around forever. They are not quite as well known here in the States. Lots of the products are more budget conscious, low price kind of entry level stuff. But their latest, they have a couple of SSD lines that are really, I don't want to say they're pushing the envelope in the enthusiast space, but they are very fast drives. And ADATA is really competitive on pricing. Now, if you look at the components on here, it's IMFT NAND flash. So, you know, Intel Micron NAND flash. SMI controller. Intel uses the same controllers on, I think, the 760P. You have, it's Nanya. I might pronounce that wrong. DRAM. So, yep. I mean, the components on the PCB, it's not like, you know, ADATA is using some crazy stuff on there. It's all good stuff, and the company has been around forever. I mean, as long as I can remember, ADATA has been, you know, they were big in memory years ago, and of course the memory market's not what it used to be, so lots of these companies have expanded their product lines, and storage, especially solid state storage, makes sense. And this is the first ADATA SSD I've looked at, and I really liked it, especially, you know, if you consider all things considered: 5-year warranty, competitive price, competitive sequential performance, and really good low queue depth 4K transfers. It's really a good mix for an enthusiast drive.
Nice.
I'm going to correct you on that, Marco. I'm see a review here for the ADATA Premier Pro SP920 SSD. It looks like you did.
You're right. But that had to be at least 2 years ago, right?
2014. So 4 years.
4 years. Yeah. So I'm a dad. Yeah. And
been anything a while.
Anything past a year or two is out. It's gone.
That is so true, man. That is so true. you have your own action items in life to account for as a human being, and then when you have children, it's like now you have these other little beings that you account for, and your brain just goes bye bye.
Yeah, I've literally read articles that I've written, and I said, oh, I wrote that.
So I was just curious if we had done an ADATA review before, and
gotcha,
found one we had.
There we go. Yeah. Now, so I'm just looking through it a little bit more here. Yeah, fantastic price, $159 on Amazon. Link in the article, by the way, folks. Check that out if you want to hit it. For a 480 gig drive, $159 for 480 gigs. The SSD toolbox. I'm looking at it. What they've got some software about, you know, here that, you know, for tuning and managing the disk. Is that ADATA grown, or are they just private labeling somebody else's tool there?
I would guess they're private labeling someone else's tool. It's definitely got ADATA's flavor. The interface is semi-modern, very colorful.
Yeah.
But what you need is there. You know, you have firmware flashing, you have health monitoring, temperature data, diagnostics, you can update the firmware, optimization tools. So, I mean, everything is there. The interface is kind of funky, but it works.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool stuff. Great drive. Yep. Great price. Impressive. What did you give it? A recommended or?
I give it a recommended because it's funny. Optane is where you want to be for solid state storage if you have the money. So, yeah. I always struggle with giving editors choices because if I had a choice of any SSD, I'm buying an Optane drive. Of course, it's triple the price of this, but that's still what I'd want.
When money is no object.
It's a highly, highly recommend this ADATA drive. Very nice. But, you know, Optane is if you're a baller, Optane's where it's at.
If you want that primo crystal solid state effect, go Optane is what you're saying.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Well, no, that's good stuff. And certainly for the mainstream folks out there where you don't need to break the bank. I mean, you know, let's face it. This thing's fast. If you're used to a SATA SSD or certainly a mechanical hard drive, this thing's going to feel like lightning. And so, you know, for the money, definitely something for the mainstream there. And you know, when you get to the Optane level of performance, sure, you get a level of system responsiveness, certainly at the low and random low queue depths and random transfers that nothing competes with like Optane. But yeah, I mean, for the mainstream user, this thing's gonna feel great. It's cheap and 5-year warranty. Yep. I'd buy it. Why not?
Sure. Absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on to something. We're going to shift gears a little bit, then we'll come back to the PC space. And I'll dive into my review that I put up last week, actually, and that's on LG's G7 ThinQ. So shifting gears to the mobile space. There it is right there in the foreground with my flower box in the background. Nice picture there. My son took that shot, believe it or not. But yeah, there's LG's G7 ThinQ. Right. It is a 6.1-inch display-based Android handset. It has dual rear cameras, dual 16-megapixel rear cameras. One's a wide aspect lens. Another one's a standard shooter. It has optical image stabilization, and it's got an AI engine on board. Certainly, it uses the Snapdragon 845 processor to empower that AI engine, but there's AI algorithms on board to optimize shot lighting and exposure and all that good stuff. And it's got some other very unique features as well, or I wouldn't say very unique, but significantly unique compared to some of the other, you know, flagship Android devices on the market today. So Samsung and Apple, obviously, on the flagship side of things, when you think of, you know, the Galaxy S9 or the iPhone X, LG found a way to differentiate. So they've also got this thing called boombox speaker, which uses the internal chamber of the chassis in the handset to really push the volume of the driver through the phone and get another 6 dB of volume. So it's called boombox speaker. There's Marco demoing it on video right there. And then it's also got that AI camera effect. And then it also has a display that actually kind of blew me away. It is not an OLED display like you might expect from LG and Samsung, certainly with Super AMOLED. OLED displays in the iPhone 10, you know, are sort of the way of the future for handsets. But LG actually stepped out with an RGBW display, red, green, blue, and a dedicated white pixel to drive additional color fidelity, you know, nice wide color gamut. It's HDR10 compliant, but it's also 1000 nits capable. So when you AB this, and I've got the device right here, I've got the display turned way down. When you AB this phone versus an OLED phone like Samsung's Galaxy S9, for example, it's actually just every bit as punchy and just as much contrast and just as much brightness. And in some cases, it's even a little bit. When you compare the whites are even more pure white. If you look at like Samsung's Super AMOLED display on the Galaxy S9, which is sort of my watermark best, you know, smartphone display out there, the whites are brighter in this handset. So it's really a punchy display. What you don't get is quite the deep blacks of OLED. But it's really good from a viewing angle standpoint, and it's really good from a brightness standpoint. So it's great in daylight settings. Because you can peg it in super bright mode and get 1000 nits and, you know, blow your retinas out. So it's an interesting device. It does have the notch, but it's also, as you can see right there, I've got it in notched mode right now, but it also has notch control, or what we call notch control, where you can pick a setting.
Do we need to pass an amendment for that?
Call it notch control. Yeah. We need to ratify that term, I think. Yeah, so you can drill down to the settings and then pick a thin bezel, contiguous thin bezel around the camera array versus the notch. However, it lets you optimize and use that area if you don't mind the notch as well. So, although it doesn't always, even when you set it to a contiguous, you know, bezel up top, it doesn't in every app maintain that. You still get a notched view in certain apps. So it's a, you know, it's a step in the right direction for folks that can't stand the notch, but you know, folks that actually make use of the notch, and it does seem efficient. You know, you can put your signal quality and clock and all that good stuff on either side of the display, and then have that in standard portrait mode. Where you miss it is when you go to landscape mode viewing videos, and then the notch goes away. You know, if you set it that way. So. Interesting phone. Snapdragon 845, fast as it's not, for lack of better words. 4 gig of RAM, 64 gigs of storage. Little on the pricey side. I'd have to pull it up, but I recall it being pushing the $700 mark. Yeah, $725 off contract on average. And I'm sure you'll see some deals come out. But beautiful, well-built phone. Caveat for me. I've liked LG phones. I was actually, as a daily driver, used the G6, for a while, and the V30, I should say, for a little bit more after that. And I liked it because, LG does a good job of, you know, they've got some of their own hooks, like that boombox speaker that's really loud. You know, and some of the camera hooks that they need to put in there. Great portrait mode, by the way, actually. And in my opinion, beats the Pixel 2 XL's portrait mode. So they've got some hooks. They've got to build some software to go with it. So they got to skin it a little bit. They have historically done a really good job of not skinning things too terribly and mucking up Android. And this is Android 8. This time around, it's still the same. They're staying out of the way. But I've been using Android Oreo on a Pixel 2 XL. And I still, you know, I really just can't get over that pure Android experience. It's hard. I know they have to differentiate. Samsung does the same thing. I think Samsung, quite frankly, is a little heavier and a little worse on the skin side of things. But this is a good, if you don't mind it, this is a good medium, happy medium, between bringing out those unique features and also, you know, exposing Android 8 and getting that out there as well. So what are your guys' thoughts? I know you got a chance to peek at it since the review. Nice looking device too. Great, well-built device. IP68, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I would totally rock that phone. Good looking phone, lots of, you know, features that people want, you know, good camera, intelligent camera, good sound, not great sounds. It's a mono output, even though it's loud, right?
If I remember correctly. Yeah. When we demoed it. Yep. Single down firing speakers. Sorry.
Yeah. It's nice. It's lightweight. It's easily palmable in one hand. You know, I've been using a Note 8. It's a little heavy, a little big now that I'm using it. I don't think I thought I would never say that about a smartphone because I love big phones, but yeah, I that size, the 6.1 is probably ideal. So yeah, I think it's a nice phone.
Yeah. On that 6.1 format, for me, it strikes about as happy a medium as I've ever seen in a handset for my size. I prefer a larger phone, but not too big. The Galaxy S9 for me, the S9 Plus, I should say, was a little too tall. The LG V30 before this was a little too wide. This is just right. And, you know, Little Red Riding Hood, just right. So, yeah, it's you know, it does strike a really good form factor as well. I don't think it's too huge and or gargantuan, but it's that big 6-inch format. Chris, I hear you itching to chime in here.
Yeah, well, kicking it back to last year with the G6, I feel like LG kind of just barely jumped the gun with that phone because that was, what, the 830 in that? And
right.
They lost a lot of the hype train to the Galaxy that came out right after. Right. So I'm hoping that LG doesn't hit that hurdle with this phone because the G6, I mean, as you know, as you use as your daily driver, was a great looking phone. So I really like what they're doing here. I do like that, you know, well, I don't like that they have the notch, you know that, but I do like that they allow you to hide it away if you so desire, which I would so desire. I do have a question for you, because obviously we know it goes to 1,000 nits brightness, but what about on the dim side when you're using it at night and don't want to, you know, blind everyone in a 3-block radius? does it get as dim as the OLED, since obviously the OLED just blacks out the black pixels?
Yeah, so it's got two modes. It's got you can run it up to 100% brightness, and it's not in super bright mode. And it's, I don't know how many nits that is at that point. 1,000 nits in super bright mode, but it's something significantly less at 100% brightness. When you hit the super bright mode, it's just another tap on the slider. It kicks into overdrive. When you dim it down for indoor use, and by the way, it has a comfort view, so blue light reduction built in. You know, that's pretty standard these days. It's built into Oreo, and so that's there. And so yeah, it'll dim down. I will say battery life for this is mediocre. 3,000 milliamp hour battery. So if you're a battery life, you know, juggernaut like you are, Chris, I know you love phones with long battery life. You're a Motorola guy, right? Yep. The G Play series, yeah. So this will not compete. It's middle of the pack in terms of battery life. If, like me, I'm a fairly, you know, power user. I'm working on my phone, doing social shares for Hot Hardware all day long when I'm on the road or whatever. And so, you know, I'm a pretty heavy duty user, and it holds up. It's fine, you know, for as a daily driver for me. Folks that are real power users, you know, that like keeping the display cranked up, you may want to look for something with a little bit better battery life, because this phone is strictly middle of the pack. The other thing, however, that's, again, LG finds a way to differentiate, and they have for the last few iterations of their handsets. The V30 had this, and I believe the V20, it may have started back in the V20, but the 32-bit hi-fi quad DAC sounds like marketing, you know, BS, right? It's not. It's a DAC is a digital to analog converter. It's a chip. It's a signal processing chip. And they have a 32-bit, you know, higher resolution digital to analog converter built into the phone. It makes an appreciable difference. I have it right in now. I have a Bose IE2 earbud, really nice high fidelity, great bass in these buds. Probably the best low end response I've heard from any earbud. This phone, when you flip it into 32-bit DAC mode, you hear it. There's better dynamic range. The highs are higher. The lows are a little bit tighter. Everything's just a little bit more accurate. And you can compare it to other phones, and I'm telling you, you can hear it. It's not just marketing. It sounds great. So, you know, they've done some unique things. Headphone jack, by the way, it still exists, USB-C and the headphone jack. So, I don't know. I guess I haven't gotten over that yet. I still need the analog headphone jack because, I don't know, Bluetooth headphones still aren't there yet. And a USB dongle, USB-C dongle stinks, right?
Just one more thing to lose.
Yeah, absolutely. I've showed up at the gym with my Pixel 2 XL, the phone I was praising before for its Android purism. I've shown up at the gym and I don't have my dongle and I'm like, crap, I got no headphones for my, you know, for the workout. It's like crushing. So,
speaking of headphones, did you get those Aki buds?
Yeah, I did get those Aki buds. I don't know, John. We'll make a small diversion.
And sorry, then we'll move along.
No, this is good, John. If you can bring this up, let me see if I can find the link. Yeah, here we go. I'm going to put this in the chat, John. This is a good diversion. Actually, this is really cool. So $18 for these Aki Bluetooth buds. $18 on Amazon.
Is that code still good?
I think it is. I mean, they were on all weekend, and we did a lot of traffic on that article. I don't know if you can bring it up, John. But so these are Bluetooth wireless buds from Aki, $18. They actually sound pretty dang good. And, you know, they have a built-in mic, volume control, all that good stuff. Charges real quick on a standard USB-C connection, or micro USB connection. And they sounded decent. Nowhere near the audio fidelity of Bose IE2s. There they are. Scroll down a little bit, John, if you can. So those are the Aki, what do they call them? The Latitude Wireless Headphones. And yeah, with that code, check it out on Amazon. Hopefully it's still active. $18. It's worth $18. Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't say they compete with Bose IE2s, but not bad for a set of Bluetooth buds.
Right. For $18, my quality checklist is, does it play music?
it plays, you know what, these are better than most sounding buds. And I mean, I've heard like Beats, you know, buds that sound like tinny crap. These sound a little better, in my opinion, than what I've heard for most buds. It doesn't even come close to the Bose IE2 fidelity, but they're pretty good, certainly for $18. Almost can't go wrong. Check out that article at Hot Hardware. We'll put a link in the chat if you want to buy a set of these. It's $18. Yeah, see, I linked it in the chat there. See if it'll still work. $18, you almost can't go wrong. So there you go. There's the world of mobile reviews for Hot Hardware this last couple of weeks. The LG G7 ThinQ recommended phone. Make sure you don't want battery life, to the nth. This is going to give you middle of the pack battery life. If you want a great display, some great features in terms of audio, and a fast phone, Snapdragon 845, you know, good value in the market for sure. It's pricey. It's a flagship phone, but relatively speaking, Galaxy S9, iPhone 10, you know, you're talking 650 on up for phones in that range. And, a flagship phone, that's what they go for these days. Kind of crazy, but that's what they go for.
I think I just actually saw a buy one, get one free. It might've been Boost for that phone.
Really?
I did just see a BOGO offer for that phone. I just don't remember the carrier.
Yeah, T-Mobile likes to do BOGOs with LG, so you may have seen that. But anyways, yeah, let's move on to the component side of things. And Marco, let's start with the value prop, and then Chris, you're going to chat about the crazy over the top. Let's talk about AMD's Ryzen line of product, the Ryzen 7 2700 and Ryzen 5 2600. These are mid-range processors from AMD, 6-core chips, I believe. And Marco, you did a full review on that. You felt they were a great value, solid performance. What else?
Yeah, so these are the chips that if you don't have the budget for the flagships, they make the most sense to buy. All other things considered, because when I went to go check pricing, there were some great deals on some of the first gen Ryzens. But so the Ryzen 7 2700 is an 8-core chip, just like the flagship 2700X. Really, the only two differences are its frequencies and its TDP target. It's a 65-watt TDP on this chip versus 105 on the 2700X. Base clock of only 3.2 gigahertz, so 500 megahertz lower than 2700X, with boost of 4.1 gigahertz, which is 200 megahertz lower. Now, if we look at the 2600, Ryzen 5 2600 versus the 2600X, both 6-core, 12-thread processors. Again, the 2600 without the X is a 65-watt part. And clocks are lower, 3.4 base versus 3.6 base, and 3.9 boost versus 4.2 boost. Now, underneath those heat spreaders, though, they're the exact same die as the higher-end chips. So if you're comfortable overclocking, you know, overclocking is not quite as flexible as an Intel processor. So you can do per CCX overclocking, but it's not really quite as dynamic as an Intel, where you just turn up the, you know, turn up the multipliers and it's going to scale up and down. You're either overclocking everything or you're not, sort of, with these Ryzen chips. You just do still have cool and quiet, but so with an all core boost, you can kind of make these faster than their higher end counterparts for less money. The 2700, for example, it didn't overclock quite as high as the 2700X. I think I got 4.225 on the 2700X, and I only got 4.1 on this, but 4.1 all-core boost resulted in higher Cinebench scores than the 2700X. So you can shoot it up quite a few bins if you're comfortable overclocking. And now I should mention, overclocking is as simple as installing Ryzen Master and moving a couple sliders. It's not this big cumbersome process like it was, you know, 15 years ago. So overall, really strong value propositions for the chips. You know, you 8-core, 16-thread chip. I believe, what was it? Let me double check. It was either 229 or 189. I'm just jumping in right now to double check. And then the 6-core chip, you know, even cheaper here. Of course, the page doesn't want to load for me here. Yeah, so 289 for the 2700 and 189 for the Ryzen 5 2600. Now, if you go look at Amazon, you might see, like, there was great deals on the 1600X from the first gen, which made it kind of a better value today. But if you want current gen latest Ryzen 2, because, you know, I would assume you're going to see performance boosts as BIOSes and UEFIs get tweaked over time. Same with the AGESA code with these chips. But if you want the latest Ryzen parts and you don't have the money for the flagship stuff, with a little tweaking, these are the chips to get. Really nice parts.
Interesting. So we talked, this article prompted us to talk about ways we can illustrate bang for your buck. And actually, one of our readers actually asked for price tags in a model per model, excuse me, in the performance graphs. And it was an interesting discussion we had, just performance per dollar. You could say, you know, throughput per dollar, however you want to measure that. But in your opinion, between these processors that you looked at, is there one that's sort of the sweet spot, bang for your buck, great value?
Yes. I'm going to qualify it, though. So when the first gen Ryzen parts hit, the Ryzen 5 1600X was just the kick-ass part for the money. Like, it brought 6 cores down to this extremely low price point. You could not even approach that before. You had to spend $1,000 on a 6-core processor before. You know, you needed an Extreme Edition part just a few years before that. The 2600 isn't quite that part anymore, because the original sort of blazed the trail. But to get the single core base clock is higher on the 2600 than it is on the 2700. So you get, you know, that better single thread performance with that chip. 6 cores, 12 threads is plenty for most people. So if you want to build a high performance system without breaking the bank, really check out the Ryzen 5 2600.
Ryzen 5 2600. Yeah, 6 cores will get it done for you, even if you want a high-end gaming rig, you know, with a big, fat, you know, GPU in there, maybe a 1080 or 1080 Ti, it'll drive that no problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have I purposefully ran numbers at with low and high res with every processor, and what you'll see is what you expect to see with the GTX 1080. If you're running, say, 4K high image quality, where you're most severely GPU limited, there's almost no difference in performance from the platforms. Like, I'm talking fractions of a frame per second. If you are running a medium quality 1080p trying to get max frame rates, you do scale, but the 2700X and 2600X are upper middle. You know, they're not the baseline processor. So, and again, we're talking, just to give you an example, Rise of the Tomb Raider, 1920 by 1080, medium quality. The 2600 is 142 frames per second. The fastest chip, the Core i7-8700K, is 158. So, yes, it's 10%, but we're not talking this kind of earth-shattering difference that you're going to see on a daily basis, you know?
Right. Good stuff. Good stuff on the value side of things. And let's see, pricing-wise, what is the 5-2600 drop in? Is that
189.
Yeah. That's a great price point for a 6-core chip. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, you grab a sub $100 motherboard with that thing. It's you're talking, you know, less than $300 for a 12-thread machine right there. That's really not bad.
Not bad at all. Well, Chris is going to bestow upon us his opinion of something that's definitely not a sub $200 chip from the folks at AMD, and that is the AMD second gen Threadripper 2900X 32 core beast chip. There was actually a benchmark leak on it that we think is fairly credible. It scales anyways. We'll see. Chris, what do we know about this thing? And I mean, is Intel running scared?
Yeah, so I think it's fair to say that we're very much in the hype phase still. You know, all of this is subject to change. It could be made up. We think it's probably pretty accurate based on what we're expecting it to be, but you know, there are biases in play there, of course. Is Intel scared? Well, if I look at our little poll we have on the side where we're asking what your next high-end desktop CPU will be between the Threadripper 32 and the Core X28, I'm seeing an 85-15 split there. So Intel might be a little worried, possibly rightfully so, because the Threadripper 32 is shaping up to be a pretty insane chip. If we look at it, obviously it has the 32 cores, 64 threads, which is server level absurd.
Yes.
Most everyone is not going to need this in their system other than to brag or show off. If you're a content creator, that's another thing. You're making money with it. That's great. The enthusiasts, yeah. I mean, I would say this is over enthusiast level. Like it's on another plane. Of course, the 28 core Intel would be probably fitting that definition as well. But yeah, we do have more details on this chip now. So it was HKEPC is where our information is coming from. And so they've got the chip at 3.4 gigahertz on an all core clock with precision boost up to 4 gigahertz on a 250 watt TDP. And of course, it's in the X399 base motherboards. It's rocking 3 megs of L1 cache, 16 megs of L2 cache, and 64 megs of L3 cache, which is just, it's a ton of cache. I don't know how else to say it. For perspective, that 3 megs of L1 cache, the 8086K that Intel has to celebrate their anniversary has 12 megs of L3 cache. So it's got a quarter much cache just in L1 just to feed the 32 cores. So that's definitely going to help when you're crunching huge data sets. It can all be in there ready to go and should help the scaling. So when we get to the numbers we see here, it looks like they were running Cinebench. And when we were looking at the first gen Threadripper chips, we were looking right around the 3000 point threshold with, again, 16 cores, 32 threads on that. So with the doubling here, the numbers they're reporting are between 6100 and 6400 in Cinebench R15. So that's pretty close to perfect scaling, which, you know, can make us a little suspicious, but AMD does seem to have a lot going on to really support a high scaling chip. Yeah. As Francois is throwing fireworks in the chat, I think I'm spooning a little too much. Maybe I am. Again, we're in the hype phase. We do have to see what Intel is going to bring out as well. But things are looking good for AMD at this point. But of course, we won't know until we get it in probably Marco's hands. And
not probably. I will fight tooth and nail.
What? I can't have it?
Acts of God and such.
No.
So I will leave the final word up to Marco on that. But yeah, it's an exciting leak. It is a leak.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be Photoshop. We don't know. But
yeah.
I like to say it's promising.
I think it stands to reason in terms of, like you said, the scaling makes sense. You know, even the screenshot from CPU-Z sort of lines up like it should. The scaling makes sense because we know that second gen Ryzen, and this is a second gen Ryzen silicon architecture, has optimizations in terms of latency and throughput. Slight tweaks, you know, 5% here kind of thing, you know, I don't even think 10%. so you tack that on to doubling of the cores, and yeah, you get some optimization. So maybe if a 16 core second gen Ryzen chip was somewhere around, you know, 3100 or whatever, 3150, now we're seeing 6300 with 32 cores. So it tends to line up. Interesting stuff. Marco, do you believe it? You think that's the real deal? That's what it looks like performance-wise in Cinebench?
Probably. So we are definitely in the hype phase, but this is what's going to happen. Right? Assuming the TDP, the heat output is manageable, right? So yeah. We saw the big giant air cooler that AMD is going to be offering. Most likely you're going to want to use self-contained liquid cooling for a chip with 32 cores. Like that, you have to cool 32 cores. It's not going to be a cool, a low power chip, period, right? There's 32 cores to cool there. So assuming that that all plays out well, and it's not some sort of cumbersome kludge just to keep the chip cool, which I don't think it will. I think we're going to be fine. You're going to have higher clocks in existing Threadripper, lower latency than existing Threadripper, likely better memory performance as AMD continues to tweak the platform, which means even better scaling than current gen stuff across many cores and threads. So should be an absolute multitasking, megatasking beast. I can't wait to test it. But, you know, Intel has had a really rough month in terms of news and kind of mishandling some stuff at Computex. In the back of my head,
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I can't count out Intel. You can't.
No.
You just can't. They're struggling with 10 nanometer. There's lots of issues that Intel is dealing with right now.
Yeah.
But that's a company full of smart people. And I don't know. We got to see what they pull. Intel still has the faster single cores, right? So they still have the IPC advantage. Can they magically pull a 32 core chip out of their hat? No. But they don't have to. You know, so we'll see. We'll see how this all shakes out. I'm just excited that there's all this excitement at the very high end of the PC space. So it's just good stuff.
You know what's interesting?
When you have a 28 or 32 core chip, how much do you really care about the single core performance when presumably the workloads you're going to be putting on it are going to be stressing as many cores as you can? I would think the all core clock speed is probably going to be more of the magic number, but what's your take?
I think it depends on the person, right? When I know there's lots of enthusiasts that have Threadrippers or Big Core X's that do not tax all those cores, right? It's an EPM contest. Yeah. It's bragging rights. And in terms of every day using your PC, the single core IPC is more important. You know, like that's what's noticeable. So it's about balance. And I'm just trying to say Intel has things to play with to rain on the AMD parade. The momentum and all the hype and all of the community support is just like has way shifted towards AMD right now. But Intel is, you know, we've seen this quarter this ebb and flow in the graphics space for years. It's kind of way shifted towards NVIDIA right now, but it could shift right back. Everyone remembers the Radeon 9800 that just crushed everything when that came out, you know, so it can be done. The underdogs can kick butt, but the big sleeping giants can also come back and do great things. So I think we should just sit back and see how this plays out, but it's good stuff that enthusiasts have this crazy hardware on the way.
You know, that's an interesting dynamic that you touch upon there. And it's a good segue for our next segment, but I won't go there yet. What's interesting to me in this whole Intel, AMD, you know, jockeying that's going on right now from a marketing standpoint, certainly both companies have to put their best foot forward about their product and position against their competition. It's the nature of the beast. It's what needs to be done. What's amazing to me is how the community and you and I, and I think Chris, you're cut from the same cloth. We're technologists. We don't have an emotional favorite. We like choice. We like great products and that's it. I don't care what, you know, to us. And I think Marco, you're the same way. I don't think, you know, to us, it matters what label is on that product. If it's a good product, I'm all for it. And so
I want it to work.
Yeah, and Chris, you're the same way, right? But what's interesting is that there's a really severe sort of dynamic going on right now where AMD is the underdog. Intel is thought of as, you know, just being the incumbent that needs to be, you know, unseated or, you know, the competition has gone beyond just, you know, hey, competition is good for the market. It's an emotional thing for some folks, and they're really like, you know, kind of stomping on the Intel brand a little bit. And you know when you see, and we see sort of the social signals that are obviously very passionate, but that's a fascinating thing. It's like, listen, folks, yes, it's great that AMD's back and back strong and giving Intel chase. Intel's a great company too. They've developed amazing technology over the years. They call them Chipzilla for a reason, right? So it's just funny. You got to think about the balance in that. And you know, as Joe Nexus, I'm not gonna pick on one of our viewers, but I want to point out this is an interesting comment. He says Intel needs AMD to keep them honest. That's a fair statement. I don't think Intel's being dishonest necessarily either, though. But yeah, that it's zen, it's yin and yang. When there's over dominance in a sector, it's not healthy always for the consumer.
You need to bring balance to the force.
Right. Yeah. So this brings balance. It's great to have a real competitive threat to Intel. Intel knows it. And yeah, it's fascinating. It's good stuff. Francois gave us a wine glass. Cheers, buddy. It's good stuff. But we'll have to watch how this unfolds. It is a beast chip. We might as well shift gears to our next segment. We'll finish up on the MateBook really quick because we're running out of time. But this is a good segue. Intel to power up its first discrete GPU confirmed for 2020 launch. Now that's a year and a half, a couple of years away now, whatever it is. And they're getting into the discrete GPU space. Raja Koduri formerly from AMD, the lead GPU design manager and architect, has headed over to Intel now, along with Chris Hook on the marketing side of things. And there's a real development effort afoot at Intel for a discrete GPU. Will the community welcome them as the underdog in GPUs? Marco, what do you think?
I don't know. It all depends on where they come. If I was a betting man, the first round of stuff is going to be sort of for the machine learning and AI space to do go head to head with NVIDIA, because NVIDIA is just killing it in that space and making money hand over fist. I don't want to diminish GPU design, right? But it's lots of replicating a few blocks in the chip, you know? So things have matured to the point where, and Intel has brought on the talent now where I think they can pull something off. It's all going to come down to whether they can build it or not. And will they be pulled for as the underdog? I highly doubt it, because their reputation in software and GPU software is not great. Plus, they're still gigantic, you know, in terms of their reach in the PC space. So I don't think they'll be embraced in that way. If something competitive comes, I think people will be happy, because that's great news for everybody. Yeah. But I don't know. We're a long ways out and a lot has to happen. So let's just, I think that's probably where we have to leave that.
Yeah, you can't make any projections. This is infancy right now, clearly. And there's a 12 to 18 month design cycle in a chip of that scale and a GPU. It's just the way it works. So they've got to move mountains and defy the laws of physics in the next 12 to 18 months. And if anybody can do it, Intel can. They've certainly got the manufacturing and design prowess to do it. Chris, what's your take on this thing? They have a shot?
Well, first I have to make my terrible observation that we now have RGB manufacturers for GPUs. We have Team Red, Team Green, Team Blue.
Oh, that's beautiful. I didn't even know that. Wow, that's good. Yeah,
I know. So yeah, I think we probably will see, just based on Intel's target market, is probably going to go to data center type applications first. I think that's a fair point. I do have just some, I guess, interesting thoughts around, I've seen some theories float around about the 10 nanometer chips that they're having trouble with, that it's been the GPU portion of that that has been holding it back, as we see the i3 that came out that was a 2+0 chip effectively. So I think that's interesting to see this GPU push at the same time that allegedly the GPU side of the processor die is having trouble. Again, I'm not at Intel. I don't have any inside knowledge there. If there's any truth to that at all, I just think it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's really, at this point, it's, you know, all they've said is, yes, we're working on a GPU and here's our roadmap, stake in the sand. And so there you go. We may have three real competitors. What's that?
I think Francois is threatening me. He just put a bomb in chat.
Yeah, Francois Pignoel. Am I saying that right? Hopefully I'm saying that right. He is a former Intel guy, so in case you don't know, but he's a very bright guy, knows a lot about the semiconductor space and all the technologies involved with it. And we'll leave it at that. He's got an interesting perspective, no matter what, guaranteed. Oh, big kiss. There you go, buddy. There you go. So yeah, let's move on. Let's move on and wrap it up. You know, we haven't gotten to the Huawei MateBook X Pro. We do have a review up on that. That is a unique new entrant in the market for Ultrabooks. Stop by the site, check out the full review on that. It is also a very competitively priced 8th gen core, very thin and light machine. With that super thin bezel display as well. Impressive machine. Paul did a review on it. Check it out. Swing on by the site. And it's a good option in the market, I think. A worthy entrant from Huawei in that space. Marco, you saw it. It was a pretty good machine, right? You felt was worthy, huh?
Oh, in terms of the hardware and the specs and how aggressive they're being with pricing. Yeah, absolutely. There's the issues to contend with them being a Chinese company and the warnings from the government. But that's actually a topic it would be really interesting to have Francois chat about, because I know he was over there years ago working on some of these, you know, super thin Ultrabook designs, to get his insight on how they're building this stuff. But in a bubble, yeah, this is a great machine. I would totally consider it, looking at its specs and prices.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Agreed. And it's a Windows 10 machine, so Microsoft on there. let's finish up with another Windows 10 machine that you assembled, Marco. the AMD and Corsair Spring Fling Raven Ridge giveaway system build video that you did. You assembled a gaming system for a lucky winner at Hot Hardware. Tell us about it, because it's pretty cool.
I did. It took a little longer than I would have liked. I really apologize. Eric is the name of the winner. I really apologize. It took this long. We had some parts on back order, and then I was mid-article when the stuff got here. But it's done. I have video
and
proof.
We're going to have a little bit of fun. I get to build.
There it is. We had audio for a second there. But yeah, AMD Raven Ridge Ryzen 5 PC on that ASRock motherboard with a bunch of gorgeous Corsair parts wrapped around it. The Corsair Crystal Series 570X case. Awesome to work in. So spacious. Lots of smart design elements for hiding cables and keeping things neat, even though it's glass on all sides. So you could see it, literally see inside from every angle. Just all around good case to work in. The system is immaculate because it's such a streamlined, clean rig with Raven Ridge and without that GPU in there. So you see there's literally only three wires that you see coming through the grommets because I routed everything else as neat as I could. Eric, I hope you like the system. It is boxed up and headed your way. Dave made the labels. So it's coming. And when you get it, I hope you enjoy it and you post some pics. And now we got to get rolling on the next giveaway. Got to figure out what we're going to put in there.
Yeah, you know, that was some great splash reel there. Thanks, John. That was tough to get it worked in there, but that's a good point. I mean, so there's a great gaming rig that we literally, you know, got a couple manufacturers together, assembled, you put some sweat equity into it, and now we're shipping it off to a lucky winner. Free, have a nice day, bang, you're a winner. And we're doing that just to build community. It's really, that's our intent. That's what's in it for us. We want you to get to know us, join us in conversation and, you know, hang out, subscribe. That's about it. It's really just, that's why we do it. And so when we posted this build video, a few comments came in saying, hey, how do I get in on this? Well, what we're going to do, and I think maybe for the next one, we can announce it again on YouTube so that the people are aware. Put some contest details on YouTube, a little bit more specifically, kind of cater a podcast to it maybe, so that there's a little bit more awareness of it in YouTube, because I think people that are on our site and certainly that come to our site, they see the post, it gets announced, you get the terms and conditions and rules, and everybody's aware there, but the YouTube community needs to get pulled in. So we got to work that hook. Sound good?
Yep. I think the next one, I'll build it first. We'll do the build video first and then yes. Give it away.
Yes, we will show the hotness prior to. Okay, that's a good idea. Great idea. You could win this. So we'll have to work on the next one. We'll see what it's made of. Pull together a couple of our friends in the OEM side and see if we can't do something special there. Sound like a plan, Marco?
Sounds like a perfect plan to me.
Chris, you in?
Oh yeah. If Marco's beautiful cabling is involved, then that's an easy sell.
Immaculate would describe the work of one Marco Cipetta when it comes to building systems. He is he builds them tight and clean and beautiful. So yeah, enjoy that.
Cables,
Eric.
Just disappear.
It does. Yeah, and everything still works. It's amazing. My stuff, I can make the cables disappear. I can't guarantee it's going to boot, but whatever.
You guys are making me blush.
Oh, you should. You do good work, buddy. So anyways, folks, that about wraps us for today. Thanks for stopping by. Find us on the web at hothardware.com, twitter.com/hothardware, youtube.com/hothardwarevids, or Hot Hardware, where you're hopefully watching us now. Hit thumbs up, subscribe, and also hit the reminder bell, because then it notifies you when we go live, and you won't miss a moment of Marco's immaculate cabling or his charming personality. So there. Facebook.com/hothardware too. Like us there, and you can follow us on the Book of Faces. Thanks everybody for stopping by. Take care.